measures on the monkfish fishery, inclusion of impacts on the fishery from the development of offshore wind, further consideration of the interactions between skate and monkfish fisheries, and an expanded description of methods for calculating discards, as well as additional information about market forces. Next slide, please. VSSC also had a discussion about how the report could help in making ABC recommendations. And so the SSC noted that the monkfish stocks are currently assessed using an empirical approach. And so there is a high level of uncertainty about the status of these stocks relative to overfished and overfishing status due to the absence of reference, or, you know, the lack of reference points due to the approach. And so they felt that in this context, that this information included in the fishery performance report does have utility to inform ABC recommendations or provide context for interpretation of the data that would help us inform ABC recommendations. The SSC noted the report's description of regulatory constraints and changing trends in price and markets provided some useful context to understanding the mismatch between some of the allocation levels and landings in recent years. Next slide, please. The SSC also discussed the utility or the potential utility of expanding the effort of creating these type of performance reports across other fisheries. And they noted that it may be difficult to extrapolate the utility of these reports to other fisheries where stock status is perhaps well-defined and where we have, you know, robust stock assessments that provide, you know, the required information that we typically rely on for making ABC recommendations. The urgency or immediate utility may not be high there. The SSC suggested that there could be some value in discussions with other councils and SSCs that have used these type of fishery management, fishery performance reports in their decision making to better understand how the information is applied in their ABC recommendation process. And the group also highlighted a potential overlap that exists between the information in this report and the information that typically gets included in the risk policy matrix. So that may want to be looked at going forward. And recommended the potential to clarify the intended use of these products in the context of any revisions to the council's risk policy roadmap. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Any questions for Dr. Kerr from the council? Anyone from the public? Okay, so Jenny, I think you're up.
All right, I'll turn it over. Jenny, I'll let you sit here so you can see the screen. The post is in the way for the audience table. But Jenny will present on the framework and note the committee's progress so far.
So as Rachel mentioned, Framework 13 was initiated by you all in April, and that includes specifications for fishing year 2023 to 2025 and consideration of revising effort controls, including day at sea allocations and possession limits, including the incidental limit. Also, management measures to reduce southern area discards, requiring 12-inch mesh for monkfish gillnets, and then requiring use of vessel monitoring systems across the monkfish fishery. So far, the committee has developed alternatives for effort controls and also the 12-inch mesh. No other alternatives were developed for reducing southern area discards, and the committee remains undecided on what to do for the vessel monitoring system. In terms of the fishing year 2023 to 2025 specifications, as Rachel mentioned, the assessment is in progress. The assessment oversight panel met last month and determined to set a level 2 management track assessment for Plan B smooth approach. During this assessment, the discard mortality assumptions will be reassessed per the council request, and the work will be peer reviewed in September. The PDT will then develop acceptable biological catch recommendations for which the SSC will review in October. As part of the specification setting process, the discard deduction is also included. The PDT is currently analyzing different methods for setting the deduction. The current approach is using the latest 3-year mean discard to catch ratio, and the alternatives include the latest 10-year mean and median of discard to catch, and the idea behind that is to try to balance more of the discards over time, provide more stability in the fishery. And then the other two alternatives is evaluating the latest 10-year mean and median of discards. And the idea behind that is the discards are largely thought to be not in the directed monkfish fishery. The PET is currently using the CAMS data system, given some delays in some of the other data systems. PET is also preparing a memo with recommendations for which discard deduction estimation should be used, and the SSC will review this recommendation in August and then provide their own recommendation for method to set the TAL. On to effort controls, just in way of background. The fishery is managed through possession limits and days at sea, and I think as Rachel mentioned, as part of the fishery performance report, the northern TAL has much higher usage, especially relative to the southern area. For current days at sea allocation, each vessel with a limited access permit is allocated 45.2 monkfish days at sea per fishing year, 37 of which can be used in the southern area. And the possession limits do vary by permit, category, fishing area, day at sea use, and whatnot. And more of specific numbers can be found in the discussion document. The day at sea use has been much lower in recent years, and there is a subset of the fishery, especially in the southern area, that seems to be more limited for the day at sea use or their day at sea allocation, and also for possession limits. In the southern area in particular, there are many trips that land over 90% of their possession limits. The AP did support an increase in effort controls, but they were interested in seeing the assessment results first and foremost. They were interested also in allowing more flexibility for their day at sea use and trying to better account for any overages in their landings. The PDT agreed with the AP, but they thought PDT thought that any changes should be small and incremental, especially for the southern area, given that the northern area already has a high TAL use. PET also recommended consideration of potentially removing the day at sea restriction in the southern area, allowing additional days at sea worth of monkfish to be landed, increasing the trip limits for a subset of the permits, potentially increasing the incidental limits, and then removing the day at sea or possession limit to help potentially create more of an efficient effort control system. The committee did develop a couple of consensus statements. I'm not going to read this in full, but the idea is the monkfish quota use in the southern area has been pretty low, especially relative to the northern area, and some adjustments to effort controls could be warranted for the southern area. And the committee followed up with another consensus statement, the idea of first allowing for additional declarations or day at sea use per trip, up to 3 days at sea, removing that restriction in the southern area, so allowing that full 45.2 day at sea to be used in either management area, then increasing the incidental limits for vessels not under a day at sea program. And then after all of those adjustments are taken into account, then to adjust the limited access possession limit such that 90% of the TAL is utilized in the southern area. And the idea behind the 90% versus 100 was because of some uncertainty in the assessment. So right now the PDT is preparing packages of these alternatives. Next, I'll move on to the management measures. First is the 12-inch gillnet mesh. So currently, there are areas where 10-inch diamond mesh is required. The vast majority of gillnet trips, at least based on fishing year 2018 data, use the 12-inch mesh. The AP thought that requiring 12-inch mesh was a good idea to help promote sustainability for potentially new entrants into the fishery and to help overall reduce any discards. They recommended implementing this requirement 2 years out to help the fishery adjust. Committee also developed a consensus statement on this with the idea behind requiring 11-inch or 12-inch minimum mesh and agreed with the 2-year implementation. Second, the Southern Fishery Management Area discard measure. So the magnitude of discarding the southern area has increased over time. Though, as Rachel mentioned, we don't have the latest discard year data. And this was largely, in years past, this was largely due to the 2015 year class from the dredge fishery in particular. So some reasons for discarding were primarily no market and poor quality. So the AP recommended against developing alternatives for the for reducing southern discards because they didn't want to constrain any of the scallop dredge fishery. They're interested in waiting for the assessment results before making any other recommendations. Committee developed a consensus statement on this and agreed with the advisory panel and recommended against developing alternatives that would constrain the scallop dredge fishery at this time. They thought that the other effort control adjustments and the other management measures would help get at the same goal, same outcome. And lastly, for vessel monitoring system, as you can see on the screen here, there's a data table showing that by permit category, which categories had a higher percent of vessels without activated BMS, and these numbers are likely to change as they were pulled early May, so early into the fishing year. But as you can see, permit categories A and B had higher percentage of vessels without activated BMS. The AP recommended against developing alternatives that would require BMS across more of the monkfish fishery. And the idea behind that, or rationale behind that, was because of costs and space limitations on the smaller vessels. So this was discussed during the monkfish committee meeting at the end of May. And committee put forward a motion of recommending against developing alternatives that would broaden the VMS requirements for the monkfish fishery with rationale that there is no clear and present need for VMS. There's a lot of space issues, cost considerations, and there's no clear problem statement that VMS would address. This motion failed at the committee, 281, and the committee has not made any alternatives or provided any PDT tasking. So today, the PDT is looking for more of the council input on how to move forward with any alternatives, if there's any PDT tasking. And I'll just note that the committee was interested in better understanding any enforcement issues around that VMS would help solve or achieve. And I know the GARFO committee rep was going to look into this more. So I guess I'll stop here and maybe take any questions and comments, maybe first on the specifications, and then we can get into the management measures.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Jenny at this point from the council? Mr. Salerno, then Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I was going to jump ahead to effort controls. And this may not be to you. This may be more to the committee chair and actually the members of the committee. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this idea of moving this fishery into a 12-inch gillnet mesh, minimum mesh size. Currently we are at 10-inch. I'm still trying to wrap my head around, what's the cost benefit here? We already know that 95% of this fishery is already at 12 inches. Gillnet discards are very minimal component of the total discard component, and now we're talking about 5% of the fishery. We're talking about minor numbers here. I'm trying to wrap my head around, what are we saving here versus what is going to be the economic output for this 5% of the fishery that has to come back and, re-rig up to the 12 inches. I'm also thinking about this biologically. My years of cutting open monkfish on gillnets using 12 inches has taught me that the 12-inch gillnet fishery is pretty much, I wouldn't say exclusively, but it's a very heavily female-directed fishery. Obviously, you're catching larger fish with larger size mesh sizes, and those are what the larger fish are. These are the females already. I've always kind of thought about, well, and some of the work that I've done is that the 10 inches, it's closer to a 50-50 spread versus the males versus females. So I'm just kind of curious, what's the biological benefit as well when we start moving to a fishery that's targeting females only? So I'm just looking some feedback on the justification of moving forward on this. I know we had this discussion at the skate, I believe under Framework 8, and we kind of punted, say, well, that's a monkfish thing, let's put it on the monkfish committee. So I'm just kind of get some feedback on why we're still looking at a 12-inch fishery, mesh size fishery only. Thank you.
Do you want to go to Libby first, Jenny, or?
I might quickly say, I know at one point there was mention that a new entrance into the fishery, that larger mesh, it would be beneficial if that larger mesh was already in place to help promote sustainability from the get-go. But maybe Libby has some additional thoughts.
Ms. Etree.
Thank you. I think that there was, I'm quickly scrolling through some of the recap from the AP meeting. There was a robust discussion at the AP. Ideally, first and foremost, a lot of these questions and the analysis and whatnot will come through with the PDT looking at the alternative currently being proposed. But from the AP, I think what they identified was the concerns about some discarding and sublevel catch in the lower mesh, the thought process that the majority of the fishery is using 12-inch mesh. They feel that it's a cleaner gear to be using from a bycatch component. And the proposal specifically that was looking at the two-year to phase it in was to actually create the opportunity for anybody that still has smaller mesh gear to phase in to the larger mesh consistent with just the way that their fishing behavior would go. I will say, and I would turn to Jenny and Rachel, I don't believe at the time at the AP or at the committee we had a discussion about the 12-inch mesh catching more females. I think that is an observation that is worth looking into doing the analysis within the framework. But generally speaking, there seemed to be coming from the advisors an acknowledgement that the larger mesh would create a quote-unquote cleaner fishery as it related to bycatch. And the thought that since the majority of the fishery is already using it, by having this delayed implementation, it would just enable folks to just acquire the larger mesh as they're swapping out older gear for new gear.
Thank you. And I do appreciate that. I understand that it's still in my mind. I mean, we're trying to clean up a fishery that really isn't very dirty. So I get what has been presented. I still, in my mind, I'm trying to reconcile that. I'll just leave it at that, and I'll let you guys kind of go along, and I'll just kind of follow the process, and, I'll go from there. Thank you.
Okay, next I have Mr. Smith and Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Jenny, thank you for the presentation. I was hoping you could go back. I think it was slide 12 that had, it was a consensus statement too with regards to the effort controls. Yeah, that's the one. So just looking at these proposed adjustments to the possession limits and the days at sea restrictions, I think it's worthwhile to consider those and, you know, to try to optimize the landings and get closer to the TAL. The question I had was whether the PDT or the committee, how they were thinking about these in the context of the information presented in the performance report that talked about the high levels of latent effort in the fishery and the unused days at sea, and how you sort of thought about trying to adjust the management measures to increase the landings while also taking into account that there's a lot of latent effort out there, and what happens if that latent effort activates in response to the changes to the effort controls. Is there any discussion on that? And if so, could you share what the thoughts were?
Sure. So the idea of, or the concern over latent effort has been discussed for several years now. And the AP did mention that concern. Well, what happens if we increase days at sea allocation and increase possession limits? What will happen? Well, more fishermen jump into this fishery. The PDT is still working through an approach to help address the adjusting effort controls, but we haven't come up with anything at this time.
Follow up, was there, maybe as you're thinking about those adjustments, maybe, I know landings are well below the TAL, but maybe looking at adjustments to those measures at with a target of 90%, but maybe having a 75% of the TAL target to have another alternative in there that might at least be able to be considered as we think about the potential for latent effort coming back in. So might be something to think about. Thanks.
Mr. Alexander.
Thank you. Thank you, Jenny, for the presentation. I have two questions. The first is, the presentation tomorrow in Atlantic Sturgeon is going to suggest 13-inch mesh. Had that information been available when the AP or the committee met, and did they talk about that?
The AP met in early May, and the committee met in end of May, and I don't believe that information was yet available.
Okay. I don't know if that's going to result in this action actually having an alternative that goes up that high, but that's something that might have to happen. Just a little bit of follow-up to Jeff Smith's comments. This idea of allowing up to 3 days at sea for a trip, which might actually be shorter than that, one way to look at that is you're actually turning days at sea into quota. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It certainly makes fishing more flexible and efficient. However, did the committee or AP consider that that itself might make monkfish fishing an attractive opportunity to reactivate some of the latent effort?
That's a great question. I think I'd have the similar answer as before, is there is a lot of concern over adjusting effort controls and what that will do to latent effort and if there's any reactivation, but I don't really have anything else to share on that.
Thank you.
You all set, Mark? Okay. I don't see Mr. Hughes. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just let me know when it's appropriate to make comments. That's all. Thank you.
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
So I sit on the committee, and the committee has some valid questions, I think, in regards to VMS and discard mortality rate. I think we're really going to be driven by the 2022 assessment. That's going to provide us with well-needed information to help inform our decisions. And I think that that's why we kind of set the VMS requirements aside during our committee meeting, because we did want that additional information. And the discard mortality rate could significantly change based on the assessment, the 2022 assessment. So that's why we made some decisions there. I'm very interested to see the SSC recommendation, the AP recommendation, and a committee recommendation, and trends and prices over time. Because if I go back and I look in my records, I'm paying today for monkfish per pound what I paid almost 15 years ago. So that trend has gone up and down on a seesaw motion. And also the markets. The markets, we were at a significant advantage 15 to 20 years ago because the United States was one of the two major players and major harvesters of monkfish, and now it's become a much more worldwide fishery. So the market trend, I'm also very interested in seeing. If I may address through the chair, Mr. Salerno's comments about 12-inch gillnet with being females, I don't think that we've seen any data suggesting that. And that would be interesting data to better understand if that is the case, because, and maybe that's something that we could, as a council, we could task the PDT to do some analysis on, because I just haven't seen that. I don't believe that I've seen it yet. And I know we've done a lot of things online, and I can't believe I took a little nap during that portion. So, those are just my comments, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate you to allow me to make those today. Thank you.
Okay, Pete. Yeah, and the other economic component of the monkfish fishery that doesn't really exist anymore is the livers. There's no market for livers anymore either. So, and that used to be a big piece of that economic puzzle for sure. Mr. Alexander, is your hand back up?
No, sir. I just forgot to.
Okay, very good. Seeing no more hands, Ms. Etree. Sorry, go ahead, Libby.
No, I was just. I don't know if you were going to turn it back over to Jenny and Rachel, and if you were, I just wanted to quickly jump in and say, two things. I have a specific question for the council regarding VMS, and I think we might get some feedback on VMS. But for the other consensus statements coming out of the committee, it is my understanding, since these are all development of alternative motions or consensus statements, those will not be coming in front of the council. So I guess I'm just putting out there, if individuals have specific thoughts on some of our consensus statements, would now be the time for them to raise them for consideration so that we don't, we can keep letting the PDT move forward with their analysis and their work on these alternative development motions or consensus statements.
Yeah, that would be fine with me. I would like to isolate the VMS question to a few minutes from now, but certainly okay. Comments on the consensus statement are valid. Is that okay with you, Libby?
Yeah, that's fine. I didn't want us to move on to the VMS discussion without first just kind of posing it to the full committee in light of some of the comments we received. If they had any specific comments or thoughts or adjustments they wanted to propose for these consensus statements, because they're not currently going to come forward as they normally do, since they're all towards the development of alternatives. And I think process-wise, we don't normally bring these to the full council for adoption. And I just want to make sure that we keep the PDT moving forward as much as possible, because this is a complicated, all actions are complicated with a complicated timeline, but this one also includes joint action with the MID. So just trying to make sure we don't inadvertently create issues further down the line.
Okay, thank you. Well, with that in mind, Mr. Smith and Ms. Braun.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question actually had to do with VMS, Mr. Chairman, so I'm happy to hold off on that, assuming Jenny might still be available to answer a question about some of the VMS numbers she presented when we take it up when you'd like to. Is that fair enough?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Let's save that till the end, and let's get through the body of this before we get into VMS. Ms. Braun?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question also, actually also sort of concerns the EMS, but it's a quick one, so hopefully it'll be okay. I don't know much about this fishery, and you mentioned that one of the reasons that you were opposed, that the committee was opposed to requiring VMS, was the small size of the vessels. What's the average size of these vessels, or what's the rundown of sizes?
That's a great question, and the PDT still needs to collect some of that vessel length data.
You must have some idea. Are we talking like 30-foot vessels or 16? I assume it's not 16-foot, but...
I think the former.
Okay, anyone else from the council? Anyone from the public? Seeing none. Okay, back to the council. Ms. Eitri.
Thank you. So, seeing none, I'm going to take this as a sign that the PDT is all set with moving forward with these consensus statements and the analysis that goes with them. I'm going to revert back to the VMS discussion and just, you know, as I think Jenny highlighted, we have alternatives for effort controls and gillnet mesh, but we currently have no direction from the committee on what to do about VMS. The question that I have for the council is the council okay with waiting until September for the committee to decide if the alternatives are warranted? And I would just highlight that that, again, potentially could pose some problems, considering that this is a joint action with the MID and the timeline and taking final action. And I do believe we might get some comments regarding VMS from an OLE perspective. I don't want to be putting folks on the spot, so I'll just toss it out there as a possibility, but I would ask the council for some feedback or thoughts either on what they think the goal and objective would be for implementing VMS requirement for the entirety of the fishery, or alternatively, if the council feels it that they're comfortable waiting till September for the committee to come up with alternatives for this priority.
Okay, thank you, Libby. Let's put OLE on the spot. Mr. Gilbert.
I'm unmuted now. Can folks hear me okay?
Yeah, you can speak up a little bit. That would be great.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Caleb Gilbert, Compliance Liaison, Northeast Division, NOAA Law Enforcement. From a VMS perspective, I don't think Office of Law Enforcement has any additional information to provide unless the council requests it, other than what Jenny included, I believe, in the last slide of her presentation related to the failed committee motion. So, you know, basically in summary, while we support in general the use of VMS in the monk fishery or any fishery for that matter, OLE certainly is not advocating for its use in this fishery, but I can maybe elaborate a little bit further if folks need me to, but maybe that's sufficient for the context of this conversation.
Okay, well, let's see how the conversation goes, Caleb, so sit tight. So out to the council, we can wait until September, or we can come up with some alternatives for VMS or test the PDT, if you like. So, Ms. Ware.
Thank you. This may be a question for either Garfo or OLE, but I think it was in the advisory panel summary, there was a reference to the cellular trackers that the lobster fishery has been pursuing. Obviously, that was done through ACFICMA, but I'm curious if there's been any kind of just general discussion about the use of cellular trackers, given that they can provide a much higher ping rate at a much lower cost.
Mr. Pentney.
We've been discussing the concept of those trackers in the context of the lobster fishery, as you noted. We haven't had any discussions that I'm aware of specific to for the monkfish fishery. I think it would create some issues if a portion of the monkfish fleet was using, you know, the satellite-based VMS and another portion was using the other trackers, the main one of the main differences is when are you getting the information about where they're fishing. The benefit of the cell-based trackers is they have a very high ping rate, you know, on the order of seconds to every minute, but you don't get the data until after the conclusion of the trip when the trip is uploaded, versus the traditional VMS we use in our other fisheries that are satellite-based, and you get real-time information, but the ping rates are on the order of, you know, 30 minutes to an hour. So I think if we, if the council wanted to have that discussion, that would, you know, be something that we'd have to look into, and it would be worth really thinking hard about if we wanted to have that kind of disparity.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, I might offer, I think that that conversation has some fruit to it to pursue, not just for monkfish, but for other fisheries. I understand there's trade-offs in real time versus, you know, when you get the data and how fast the ping rate is. And there's different circumstances in which one may be preferable to another. But given the conversations we're going to have tomorrow about right whales and sturgeon, both of which are focused on the monkfish fishery and spatial management measures, I think that conversation may be appropriate at this time. And I'm not on the monkfish committee, and I'll defer to those on the monkfish committee on whether VMS alternatives are developed, but I'll just offer through the experience I've had with the take reduction team, having finer spatial information can provide benefit to fisheries in knowing where you fish, but also where you don't fish. So I will just offer that as a lesson learned.
Okay, thank you. Miss Etree. Oh, you want to go back at that, Mike? So I'm sorry. Hang on, Libby. Go ahead, Mike.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a really good point. I think that's what I would advise the committee and the council to really think hard about is what data do we want and why do we want it? You know, the traditional, as we've said, you know, traditional VMS, real-time satellite-based is, you know, primarily focused on active real-time enforcement of closed areas where you need to know where the vessel is at any one time. But having, high-resolution spatial data in terms of fishing effort, where gear is being set, where it's not being set, sort of lends itself more to these cheaper but higher ping rate, higher resolution data that you don't get until after the end of the trip. And so there may be some merit to having that conversation, particularly if we are trying to look at bycatch. It's not important to know where the fishing activity is occurring real time, but it really does provide good, solid data for analysis.
Go ahead, Jenny.
I just wanted to point out that during the last couple of committee meetings, this idea was brought up and discussed, and additional information on the vessel tracking information is found in section 4.3.2 of the discussion document, if you're interested.
Ms. Etree.
Thank you. I really appreciate this discussion, both from Ms. Ware and the RA. I think it's important to highlight during our last committee meeting, I think it's on slide 18. Obviously, we had a motion, it failed. And part of the reason why it failed is because I think there continues, from a committee perspective, to not have a clear articulation of what it is we're trying to do. Some on the committee had articulated that the issue was that they were being asked to articulate a problem, and they saw a VMS requirement potentially as more of a proactive measure, maybe more towards this spatial concern with sturgeon and right whales. No one at the time at the committee meeting after this committee motion failed was willing to offer an alternative motion that maybe reframed it less as a problem statement and more as a proactive measure that they're trying to address. But I think that, you know, the discussion between the RA and Ms. Ware is highly important. And I think if the council has strong feelings one way or the other, it would be really helpful if we could have that conversation or have some type of direction coming up from the council, because I do worry about trying to wait until September to have the committee come back and revisit this. I was looking for the great timeline that Rachel usually presents, I feel like we would just be really stuck in a hard place to be trying to do this work in the fall versus using the time in the summer. So maybe some members that are on the committee have had an opportunity to think about how to reframe it less as a problem and more as a benefit, and they're willing to offer something up. But I think it would be helpful if we could get some better direction from the PD too. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Smith and Mr. Olszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question and then a comment I'd like to share. The question has to do, I believe it was with slide 17 that had the number of vessels with the VMS activated on it for the various permit categories. And I'm going to display a little bit of my ignorance as far as monkfish management goes. But so is it my understanding that no one is required to use a VMS system because of the monkfish regulations, and people are using them in the fishery because of requirements and groundfish or scallops, or is that what we have going on now?
Yes. So the if VMS is required in other permits, VMS must be used during monkfish trips, even though the monkfish fishery management plan does not explicitly require it.
So on the category A and B, we have people that are using VMS, even though they're not required to. Do I understand those three vessels each are using them even though they don't need to?
If a VMS unit is on board, they are required to use that VMS unit regardless of the requirements in the monkfish fishery. I guess just to clarify, monkfish fishery does not have any explicit VMS requirements, so if a vessel doesn't have other permits and only has a monkfish permit, then that vessel is likely to not or could not have a VMS unit. But if there are other permits that that vessel has that require VMS, then the VMS unit would be required to be turned on monkfish trips.
And so for those C and D vessels that are participating in those fisheries or people that are not activating them, how is that happening?
I guess I'll clarify. So the activated VMS is the data were pulled early May, so at the start of the fishing year. So there could be some instances where the vessel has not yet gone on a groundfish trip or a fish that or a trip that requires VMS units. So there could be some variation in those data. So once they take a first trip that requires VMS, then the VMS unit would be turned on for the entire fishing year. So there could be some of those vessels that have taken only monkfish trips and that VMS unit would not yet be activated, if that helps.
Thanks, that's super helpful. I appreciate it. So as far as a bigger issue goes, you know, I am supportive of us looking at options for VMS in the monkfish fishery, whether it's with the cellular technology or others. I think we need good spatial and temporal information on the footprint of our fisheries to manage effectively in general. And I think the points that Ms. Ware and Mr. Pentney raised about needing spatial information on the footprint of the fishery for endangered species or protected species interactions is an important one. I note that in the fishery performance report, I think there's concern within the industry not only about protected species but also about offshore wind development. And I think that having good spatial information on the footprint of the fishery will also be helpful for the participants in the fishery when they're engaging in the offshore wind discussion to be able to demonstrate where they fish and where they don't fish. So I think having this information is important for managing the monkfish fishery, and I think it's also important for informing our deliberations and discussions around protected species and offshore wind and other issues. You know, aquaculture is coming, we know that one too. So, you know, I'd be supportive of us moving forward with something with respect to the VMS going forward on the framework. Thank you.
Okay, Jeff, if you want to think about a possible motion for the council. I'm going to go to Mr. Olszewski, but I'm happy to come back to you if you decide you want to make a motion. So Mr. Olszewski, then Mr. Tracy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I equally value the discussion at the table here. At the committee, I opposed the motion to remove VMS from the framework for a lot of the same reasons that have been stated already. I don't need to go through them, but it would seem to me that the rationale for this staying in the framework or evaluating alternatives is the same, is similar to that in the lobster fishery, as Megan had stated as well. To address protected species, wind development, enforcement, i.e. potential closed areas, and the general spatial footprint of the fishery. Some of these technologies have come a long way. We use them on small vessel programs that we have at the state level. I guess one of the things that I've been thinking about since the committee meeting is we have a pretty large percentage of participants that already are subject to some VMS requirement from other fisheries. We've recently adopted the commission's tracker addendum for the lobster fishery. And I have a feeling a lot of these vessels participating in both these fisheries. I guess I'd be interested to see at some point after the tracker addendum is goes through, I would be curious as to what percentage of the fleet now has VMS, and then if it encompasses the vast majority of the fleet, then that's what I would support. Thank you.
Okay, Scott, thank you. Would it be possible to put that slide with the numbers of with the permit categories and who's got them and who doesn't have them, so we can maybe help the decision along? Before I go to you, Mr. Tracy, I'm going to go to Mr. Neese.
So if I might, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask, I think, Mr. Pentney a question before any motion gets put up on the board. I'm a little concerned about the tracker discussion. My understanding with the use of VMS is that VMS standards are adopted and implemented for federal fishery management plans by NOAA OLE. I don't believe that is the case for the trackers used in that the commission has adopted in the lobster fishery. And so I'm curious whether the agency has standards for cellular trackers, whether if they were adopted here, they would have to be implemented in VMS. And the reason I ask that question is not because I have a stance on trackers one way or another, but it seems like if there aren't standards established, it's really not an option for this particular framework, though it might be an option for something in the future.
Yeah, I think your concluding statement, I think, is correct. I think if the council wanted to move towards the vessel trackers, similar the cellular-based vessel tracker, similar to what the commission is implementing for the lobster fishery, that would likely require either I don't know that it would require an amendment per se, other than it would likely require a timeline longer than what we can live with for this framework, given the need to get specifications and other measures addressed. So it might require a standalone framework that we could work on over the course of a year or so, because as Tom hinted at or said, the VMS, the satellite-based VMS, we have those standards. They exist. Basically, it's just switching a flip and saying, or flipping a switch and saying, this fishery is now required to abide by these regs. We don't have that for the vessel trackers that we're looking at for the lobster fishery. And so we would need to, if that was going to be brought into the federal system, we would need to look and see and probably establish those standards and run through the process to accept the, to test and evaluate and accept the service providers that would provide that. And I think that's just a longer time horizon to work through the issues than it would be. So, yeah, I think if this is an option, not to say one way or the other whether it's a good option or a bad option, but if it is an option that the council wants to consider, I suspect that's a separate action from this framework.
Mr. Neese, you all set?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, Mr. Tracy.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, this is a helpful discussion. As a member of the committee, I'm just thinking back on the discussion we had at the committee, just share, and obviously this is all in the documents, but
the rationale for what the upside was of requiring the few boats that didn't have the VMS and wasn't really clear. Obviously, we could all deduce the benefit with the fixed gear and the whale issue, etc. But there, what there was from the AP was some really specific comments about the burden it would create, both an expense. I think there was some discussion about space, and you know, we talked about that a little bit. But that was, at least for me as a member of the committee, what kind of persuaded without a really clearly articulated benefit, except what we all could logically assume why it was better to have it than not. But there was clearly, as opposed to, for instance, the mesh issue, which it was widely supported at the AP, which obviously was an easier decision. So just sharing that. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Alan. Any other comments about this from the council before I go out to the public? Seeing none, anyone from the public? Seeing none. Okay. What do you want to do? Mr. Smith.
So I'm not prepared to make a motion at this time, not being on the committee and understanding the issue as well as I would like before making a motion. And also in light of Tom Neese's comments, I'm not going to move forward with a motion. I think at the beginning of this conversation, there was a question about whether something would be done on this today or whether we could wait until September. Can I ask a question of the committee chair through you, Mr. Chairman? What was that an option? Maybe we could give it some more thought between now and September.
Ms. Etri.
I think what the council needs to consider is that if the PDT doesn't have further clarification and direction on what they would be developing as an alternative for this priority, they would not be doing the work over the summer. And it could come back up at the committee meeting when we meet sometime in the fall in September, or it could potentially be articulated, but it's not in the presentation. Maybe Rachel can speak to it. I think what's important for folks to realize, in order to get the specifications in place for the start of the fishing year, we obviously, like every FMP, have to try to finalize the action in the fall, winter months. This specific FMP is jointly managed with the Mid-Atlantic Fishery Council. So we need to refine our alternatives. We need to be comfortable with them. The Mid needs to be comfortable with them. So it's just a little bit more extensive of a process. And so I guess it would turn, and I know PDT does everything they can, even when we give them things late in the game, but I guess I would turn to Rachel or Jenny and ask them maybe to talk timeline-wise what happens if they don't have the summer to work on this alternative.
Doctor?
Sure. Libby characterized that pretty well. We do need to interact with the Mid-Atlantic Council. So, you know, it would be helpful to get some direction from the committee, from the council today, if you want work on this. I suppose it's not a mission failure altogether if we wait till September. We're not taking final action on this till December. The idea when we laid out the work for the year was to focus on, try to get the management measures fairly well cemented earlier in the year so that we could focus on the specifications. Once we get the assessment in mid-September, we need to move pretty quickly into, you know, developing those so that we were hoping to focus the latter part of the year on that. You know, if we're trying to develop a VMS option, that, you know, there are some complications that we've noted today that will take some effort to sort through, and so we were hoping to have a signal by this point in the year on if we were working on that topic. I will note the council has raised this idea many times over the last few years. We noted some of that history in the discussion document. This has been on the tasking list for a number of years to think through this topic. It was raised in the skate committee context with Amendment 5, and last summer it was kind of kicked off that action and moved to the Monkfish Committee. So we're hoping to have some resolution on if this is something we're actually working on.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Bellavance, and then Mr. Nace, and then Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a hypothetical scenario with a question attached to it. So judging from what Regional Administrator Pentney said, if the council were to consider that cellular-based type tracker alternative, that wouldn't be approved, or it wouldn't be possible. I'm just trying to figure out how to word this the right way. What I'm wondering about is, if we have these lobster fishermen that are going to have those trackers on them, they also have monkfish permits, and we put some VMS system on them, it seems like, from what Mike Pentney said, that would have to be satellite based because that's the standards that are approved currently. And so would those fishermen need to have two different tracking devices on their boat and have to operate both of those? And if that's the case, then I think we need to pull back a little bit and figure out a way to make it a little easier for everybody, because that would be a nightmare. I don't know if there's anyone that could answer that for me.
Mr. Penney?
Yeah, thanks. I think that's a really important point, is that when we, vessels that have, say, under the groundfish FMP, a requirement for satellite-based VMS with a one-hour ping rate according to certain standards, that requirement doesn't go away if they then become subject to other regs that require cell-based trackers with a one-minute ping rate that's uploaded at the end of the trip. So there could be duplicative requirements, and that might be happening under our lobster action that we're working with the commission on. But that might occur as well. I mean, I'm looking at the table that staff presented, and while I think it's worthwhile for the council to think about these high ping rate, high resolution vessel trackers for the monkfish fishery, if what we're interested in is getting higher resolution effort data on where fishing activity is occurring, where the gill nets are being set, for example, but we already have a disparity in the monkfish fishery. You've got, you know, 365 CD permits using satellite-based VMS and only 89 not activated. If you put those high ping rates on the 89 vessels and the others are using one-hour ping rates, you're not getting comparable data across the fleet. So we might be looking at having to become duplicative reporting so that we have comparable data. Anyhow, all that being said, I'm going to offer a motion to remove consideration of VMS in Framework 13. And if I get a second, I can offer a little bit of a little more rationale for that.
Okay, I got a bunch of hands up, so if somebody could raise your hand physically. Ms. Patterson, are you seconding that motion? Okay. We'll get the motion on the board. Hang on, Mike. We'll get the motion on the board. You can read it into the record, and then you and Ms. Patterson can supply your rationale. So, go ahead. You're good.
Yeah, motion's on the board. So, I mean, it's a really straightforward motion. But I think the discussion today certainly suggests that this council, could come back in September when we're doing priority setting for 2023, and I think it would be warranted for the council to consider a priority for 2023 that would be a standalone action, whether it's a framework or an amendment, to look more holistically at vessel tracking, vessel monitoring in the monkfish fishery, whether that be cell-based or sat-based. give us time to think about the most effective, most efficient method to collect effort data on the fishery, work through some of the issues of duplicative reporting and requirements, and also work with the Mid-Atlantic Council because they're partners in all of this. And we don't have to, we wouldn't be subject to the timeline associated with getting this framework completed because I think it will take some work and some issues to talk through and think about.
Thank you, Mr. Penny. Ms. Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.